As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that girl away, and who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Whoa, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Whoa, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, brothers, let's go down, let's go down, come on down, come on, brothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, fathers, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, fathers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, mothers, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Come on, mothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sinners, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sinners, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown? Good Lord, show me the way.
So, yeah, we're doing something very different today, as you can see by the chair setup. We're gonna do some exploring into the idea of creativity, specifically the idea of songwriting as a creative outlet. As Jane said, Len and Luke have been gracious enough to share some songs with us. I'm going to make some offerings of songs as well. And we're just going to kind of discuss those songs, the process of writing songs, what it sort of means in the grand scheme of things. How is it a form of worship? There's going to be a chance for you guys to interact with that, to think about it. All sorts of fun things. So hopefully fun. So we're just going to get started. I keep going out. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We're just going to do a bit of an introduction here. So as I said, we're going to talk about this idea of creating art. Because I think it's something that surrounds us all the time, art. And perhaps we don't give that much thought to how it gets to us and what the process is behind it. I was sort of thinking about this the other night. Jane and I were walking through the Exchange District, and I was just noticing how many different things are going on Friday night just in that one neighborhood. And so I went home and I did some research in the Free Press to see what was going on. And just as kind of a... This is just an interesting thing. In Winnipeg alone, which is only a mid-sized city, but actually one that's very sort of blessed with arts,
there were, on Friday night,
10 concerts, including a big one at the MTS Center with someone called Johnny Reed. Well, I'm not sure who that is, but he's evidently popular enough to fill the MTS Center. There were 4 different theater companies all putting on productions. The Manitoba Opera had Daughter of the Regiment, which is where I was. There were 4 separate art galleries doing openings. There was a bunch, I didn't count them all, but coffee houses and open mics going on. There were 41 films playing in various theaters around the city, and a film festival going on at the U of W. And then just sort of normal things, in Winnipeg there's 19 radio stations dedicated to just music. And of course there's always television going on. So we people of the 21st century are definitely an entertained bunch of people. We can have any sort of entertainment that we want, any time that we want. And you know, for those of us who don't get too hung up on pesky things like ethics, we can even get it for free if we have a high-speed internet connection. Yep, I went there. but yet, for all of this sort of consumption, it seems that I wonder how much consideration is actually given, as I said, to how that sort of enters the world. Perhaps we don't consider it too much because a lot of what sort of gets passed off as art is more like something that would come off of a factory line. You know, we sort of tend to imitate in creation. So there's a show that was very popular about the 60s, so the next season there was 4 more shows about the 60s. Books about teenage vampires were very popular, so the next year there was many, many more books about teenage vampires. Boy bands apparently making a comeback, I saw one day. So I'm sure we can expect a lot more of those. And sometimes, you know, when the nice girls with the guitars who sing songs about mean boys, when that's not popular enough anymore, well, you just crank up the bass and dress her up a little more provocatively and, you know, sell some records. So this, I'm going to get off my high horse. I just wanted to throw that in there. But this is part of the reason I think that maybe we don't consider art that much, because we think it's just coming out of somewhere and it's going to keep coming and it's not that interesting, it's easy to absorb, and even easier to forget. So, but that's not what I want to talk about today. Or that's not what this is about, this songwriter circle. What I want to talk about is the kind of art that comes from within, that is created out of our own personal interests and struggles and hang-ups and all sorts of things like that. And what it means to create, to take those personal struggles or personal triumphs or interests or whatever and turn them into art that can then become relatable to other people. It's a very tricky thing. And so, yeah, that's what we're going to explore. And what that looks like, is there a divine aspect to that? Is there something spiritual about this process? So just before we get started in a sort of conversation, I'm just going to read a few quotes from some songwriters that I think are fantastic and that are well-established, and just giving little quotes on what they've said about songwriting. So the first one is a guy named Leonard Cohen, who I talk about a lot here because he is such a fantastic songwriter. But anyway, so he said this, "My immediate realm of thought is bureaucratic and like a traffic jam. My ordinary state of mind is very much like the waiting room at the DMV. Or as I put it in a quatrain, because he's a poet, the voices in my head, they don't care what I do, they just want me to argue the matter through and through. So I penetrate this chattering and this meaningless debate that is occupying most of my attention, and I've come up with something, I've come up with something that really speaks to my deepest interest. Otherwise I nod off in one way or the other. So to find that song, that urgent song, takes a lot of versions and a lot of work and a lot of sweat. But why shouldn't my work be hard? Almost everybody's work is hard. One is distracted by this notion that there is such a thing as inspiration, that it just comes fast and easy. And some people are graced by that style. I'm not. So I have to work as hard as any stiff to come up with the payload. Then the interviewer asks him, is it a sense that you are reaching outside of yourself when you write these songs? And he replied, if I knew where the good songs came from, I'd go there more often. It's a mysterious condition. It's much like the life of a Catholic nun. You're married to mystery. So the next one here is Bob Dylan, who has written his fair share of songs. This is another interview. The interviewer asks him, do you find that as a composer you're more like a medium, tuning into something greater happening? And he replied, I think that every composer does that. No one in his right mind would think that it was coming from him, that he invented it. That's a weird thing to say. It's just coming from him. Bob Dylan says strange things, but anyway,
you get it.
So then the interviewer asks again, does songwriting come quickly, or do you have to work at it? And Dylan replied, well, sometimes it comes quickly, and other times it doesn't come very quickly. I've written songs in 5 minutes, and other songs I've had laying around for months. And then the third guy, I think that's a very Bob Dylan kind of quote anyway, very indecisive. So the last guy I'm going to quote, or the second last guy I'm going to quote from is a guy named Paul Simon. He said, there's a significant part of writing songs that I have no logical explanation for. It just seems to be something that comes from me, and I sort of recognize it, as opposed to shaping it. Oh, that's a good idea, that's a good line. I wonder where I can use that. When you get into a rhyme group like Knot, you got a lot of rhymes, you got a lot of choices. There are more. The more you do it, the luckier you get. And I've been writing songs, and all I've ever done is write songs and make records. Now it's been a long time, and I've had a lot of experience at it. And the last guy. No, sorry, I could. It's hard to find. I was looking for something from Joni Mitchell, but I didn't find too much. And the last guy I'm going to quote is you may have heard of. His name is King David. This isn't really an interview, but I'm going to quote from Psalm 40, where he says, I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in him. So again, I'm probably, lifting that out of context, but the writer part of me who struggles with writer's block likes to think of that as a struggle with writer's block. I can imagine David sitting with his parchment because he needs to write a new song for the Sabbath, and he's got nothing to say. So he just turns his writer's block, this mud and mire, into a classic. And he wouldn't be the last guy who's turned writer's block into a masterpiece. So anyway, that was just in any event, what all of these songwriters, I think, are getting at is this sort of divine nature of creating something deep, something honest, and something true. These songwriters that I mentioned are not generally known for their sort of caving to popular demands. They're not just writing songs to sell records. They write out of this innate drive to express themselves creatively, to tell stories, to shed some light on the human condition. And it's this drive and ability that I kind of want to explore today, to find out where that comes from and what it results in. So to do that, Lana and Luke and I are going to have a conversation, as I said, and we're going to discuss some songs that we've written. And we're going to sort of talk about their backgrounds and inspirations, themes, meanings, and just so we can kind of take a tiny little peek into this immense thing called creativity. So, Lana and Luke, if you care to join me on the stage. And I realize that this post is in my way, so that might be a little awkward for some of you over there, so I apologize. Well, first of all, thank you guys for being a part of this. I'm sure it can be more than nerve-wracking to have to talk about your creations, but... So we've just kind of been talking about, or you've heard those quotes, these ideas of creativity. So I'll ask the question that these guys were asked. Where do you think that songs come from for you guys? What?
For me, I kind of like what you said from Paul Simon's quote, where it's more of a recognition of a feeling as opposed to shaping it and feeling like it's like a job we have to get done. It's, for me, it's very much being in a feeling, whether that is contemplation or peacefulness or anger or sadness, recognizing that and then choosing to take the time to express it. There have been many, many moments where I'm feeling all these things and then just, you know, go do something else as opposed to kind of sit in that creative process and sort of have that sublimation of something beautiful that can come from it. So for me, that's very much, it's kind of a mix between reflection and time.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that. I think the way I look at songwriting, there's kind of two different camps you can come from. There's the storytelling, and then there's the painting with music. And I think that with storytelling, you have more of an arc. You've got a beginning, a middle, an end, a conclusion. And it follows some sort of a narrative or a storyline. But there are a lot of really great songwriters who don't think in that terms at all either. They think, you know, they have a whole one picture in their head of one big idea or one emotion or one color or one image, and then they use the song to bring that together. So whereas, you know, we might not have something that's like a typical, you know, he grew up in an Indiana town, so sort of a start and then a beginning and an end, you sort of more have, you're left with a feeling. And I think that the really great songwriters are able to convey that emotion to people, whether or not they're interpreting a story in the same way at all. Some people might listen to the same song and think of a completely different event in their lives, but be able to relate directly to it. And I think that the great songwriters are able to touch a whole multitude of people who relate to it in different ways.
Yeah, that's really great. I like that distinction, the idea of painting picture with songs. I think it's a fascinating idea and an extremely difficult one, but when it works, it really works. So what, I mean, is for you guys as songwriters, sorry, I'm not speaking to the mic, what drives you to write a song? Like, what, where does it come from?
Sometimes it's an event. The song that I'm going to start with is definitely from, I wrote it a long time ago. I probably wrote it about 5 or 6 years ago when I was working at IMAX, and it was actually a woman who was just freaking out about whether she could get into the show, and she needed this ticket, and it was quite comedic, and it was just from an outsider's perspective, like, wow, like, the show's going to go on, whether, you know, like, this thing is going to happen, and this intense emotion you're expressing is just like, it seems kind of like, do you really need to go through all that? But then I also kind of reflected how I am very much like that woman in so many other ways. And so it was cool to be like sort of an outsider and see how silly that is to try and take control over everything and realize that the control does nothing. Life goes on. And so it's really how you kind of get the attitude you choose to go into situations. Did I answer your question? I think I went.
That's great. I mean, you answered in a specific way. And I think that's helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. Any thoughts?
For me, I think I started out not really as a songwriter. I started out more of a musician. So the joy in it came from to me by playing music, not necessarily by creating it. But over the years, I've gotten more and more involved in the creation of it, and I find that it ends up being a lot more fulfilling, because, you know, when you're a session musician or you're playing in cover bands and stuff like that, you're kind of at the mercy of what the song is, you know, and you really hope that you can play some, every time you go to a gig, you really hope that, oh man, I want to take a look at the set list and see what's on here, because it's totally going to dictate whether or not this is going to be a good night for me at all. And when, you know, when you're not part of that, and when you're just creating your own, you know, your own performance, your own music, you dictate that every single time. And so, for me, the excitement comes from kind of like what I said before, finding that feeling that I want to have at that moment, and then constructing the music. The lyrics in some aspect, I'm not much of a lyricist, but I'm pretty heavily involved in the creation of, you know, song structure, song form, melody, and stuff like that. I'm trying to recreate that feeling and get it the way I want it every single performance. So it's kind of, you got the two aspects of the songwriting and the performance. You can have a great song, and you have to get the performance there as well. And those are two parts that are very exciting for me, is just creating that on stage and creating it live.
So none of us are sort of at the point now where we're writing songs that the whole world is hearing. Unlike the sort of quotes I read where those guys know when they put out a record, you know, millions of people are going to hear it. So it's interesting, I mean, and we live in this sort of pragmatic society where art and commerce are very married, and the idea is, what's the point of creating art if nobody is going to see it or whatever, but yet we create songs that maybe reach a very limited, you know, maybe we play a really big show, we'll get people to hear them, but, so, yeah, it strikes me, like, I don't know if you ever think about that when you're writing songs, or if that's important. I used to think about it a lot, not as much anymore, but so when it comes down to it, like, who do you write your songs for?
I think you have to create something initially just for yourself and God, or just that, because if you are writing it already with the vision that someone's on your shoulder reading every line,
yeah,
you're going to be like, oh, that's stupid, I can't, no, I can't do that. It's not yours anymore, and it's not really kind of as pure as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you just need to go in and write it all down, and then, you know, you can edit later, but you can't really write it for a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Otherwise you'll get what the crowd maybe wants,
I don't know, but
it won't be like what you want it to be.
What you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Luke, you're in a bit of a different situation. You're obviously, you know, your music's reaching more people. Does that come in, like when you're writing with Pumas, does that come into...
Yeah, I've kind of seen the whole transition of writing something entirely just for yourself in a basement,
mm-hmm.
recording it in a basement, and listening it, creating it for yourself to listen to, because it's just what you want to do, and I think that's how everybody gets started. But then I've also seen the transition now into, you know, we're starting to look at things more from a commercial perspective as well, but it's very important to us to try to maintain, you know, our own integrity as songwriters as well. So trying to find that balance. But I still agree that every single song we write, at first, it has to be 100% completely for you and what you want to hear and what you want to feel. But now with the more recent stuff we've been doing, after we do that, we do end up showing it to other people. You know, showing it to producers and people who are you know, more experienced in trying to get something out to a wider audience. But it is a really, you know, it's a really rough challenge to try to keep control of your creation when you're also, you know, when you have ambition to try to get it out to as many people as possible, because the fact of the matter is, you cannot please everybody.
Yeah.
So, and that goes with the wider audience as well as everybody in the band. As well as everybody who's working with the band. So, you know, the more you put it out there and say, you know, what can I change? What can I do? What do you want to hear? What do you want to hear? I think you're starting to give away a little bit more and more of yourself. These days, if you're striving for commercial success, you have to keep in mind what people want to hear, but you can't just give it all away either, because you'll lose the joy in it for yourself, and chances are you could become very successful and just be completely unhappy with what you're doing. And I've seen that happen, and I've seen bands break it and then fall apart within a year for that very reason. So it's a really fine tightrope. But I completely agree, when you start a song, it has to be for yourself. Because if you start something for someone else, it's not going to go anywhere. It's not a representation of who you are.
Sure. That's great. Okay, one more thing, and then we're going to let you go to town. Would you consider this sort of act of creation, songwriting, even, well, we're talking specifically about songwriting, but, I mean, painting, writing poetry, anything, does it ever enter in that this is sort of a worship experience for you at that time? I guess that could be a yes or no question, but try and expand on it if you can.
I'd say absolutely. I feel very much at peace when I'm singing the song, because I know it's, it is very much a worship experience for me. And I after I wrote the song based on experience I had, I found sort of a verse in the Bible, which I can read, that is very much tied to it, and it just completely has to do with one another. So I'm either remembering that story and seeing myself in this woman, and then also seeing what I need to do in the verse that is teaching me.
Sorry, I meant to ask for a lost
question. That is, would you feel consider like the act of creating worship? Worship.
Yeah, as soon as you said that, actually, I started going off my own tangent in my head, because for me, there is no distinction. I feel that music is worship for me. It's not an act of worship. My worship is music. And there's no time when I feel closer to God than when I'm engaged in something musical. Whether or not it's worship music. I come from a pretty heavy jazz background, and so improvisation and communicating and relating to others on the fly through music is a huge form of worship for me. And there's no place I feel more like I am where I need to be than when I'm doing that, or when I'm meeting worship music or playing music or anything like that. So anytime that I can give back to the church or do something spiritual through music, I'm always more than happy to do it, because that is church for me, more than sermons, more than reading scripture. That's what it is for me. I think everybody finds something different. For a lot of people, the time when they feel most spiritual is when they're with others and communicating with others, you know, in a Bible study or engaged in conversation, or you know, seeing beautiful art or creating a painting or cooking, baking, something that I think everybody finds something that they really connect with and just feel in their zone, and it's a time when they can actually think about and communicate with God because they're so comfortable with where they are. And I find that sometimes when I play music, my headspace is often in communication with God more than if I'm just sitting still saying, okay, now I'm going to pray, or now I'm, you know what I mean? It's something about that just turns you on, and I think everybody has a different thing. And for me and a lot of other people I know, it's music.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I mean, my thought, like what you're saying too about writing a song and finding something else that connects to it, I know it's a weird space, at least I know for me as a songwriter, I go into where you're just kind of trying to come up with lines or ideas and express them, and then later you come back to them and you're going, oh man, I was really onto something here. Where did that line come from, or whatever? And I find too, I mean, I've been at songwriting for a few years now, and I look back on stuff I wrote maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and I think, wow, I was really, really onto something here. How did I ever know that this would be meaningful later in my life, or whatever? And I think that's the beauty of music, is that it, you know, it's sort of abstract enough that you can connect. It can connect to so many different people. And I think that, for me, is the worship experience of it, is just tapping into something that's beyond me, that's greater than me, and for some reason, been able to tap into maybe a couple of times and come up with something that I like and that other people like. And so, yeah, to me, it's totally that kind of worship space you go into. And it's not the same way that we would always see it, but what you said, Luke, is right. I mean, it's what works for you, so... So I'm going to let you share your songs, and yeah, we'll kind of figure out how this is going to go.
So. I'll read that verse that has very much to do with this, and I just wanted to actually say, Tillman, when you were sharing community time, and someone asked, oh, like, do you have a place to stay? And it was just kind of up in the air. Like, I really like that, and that's kind of what this song is a reminder of. It's like putting faith in God, knowing that it'll work out, not having to control every single step, because although we have the free will to control everything, which, you know, is a joy that we have that choice, I don't think it is for us to do. And so, yeah, thanks for letting me shut that up to it. So this is from Matthew 6:25. Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the fields grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you? Oh, you of little faith. So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own.
Lana has a wonderful guitar player in her band who is not me. So this is a drummer's interpretation of the guitar parts for this song.
Merry-go-round.
That was great, by the way. Thank you very much. It was fantastic. I never heard you sing like that. So that's great.
My voice is not good in the morning. Oh, Sunday
I thought it sounded fantastic. Okay, so we didn't really go over how we wanted to do this, but I think you gave a great introduction to it. Are there anything, other things you kind of want to talk about with it, or you were interested in hearing feedback, what you were saying that was... For this one, or
more so for the next one, but I don't know. Did anyone have anything that spoke to them about that, or wanted to say anything about it? There's no right or wrong answers, by the way.
I actually definitely did. I really liked the final chorus where where you just come out and say, I thought it was really cool leadership, just saying like you are her, like this character, this woman, and you admit that you are. You are her too, and I think I really started to feel it. I feel like that's got to start happening in musicians. I think artists are you guys are totally like these really cool leaders in our society, and I think that just taking those little steps of kind of upfront leadership for that really spoke to me, and I really really totally dug it. Yeah,
I dug it is the best compliment you can give a musician.
I guess, yeah, if there's nothing else for this one, I'll get right into the next one. I want to say the same thing, kind of a little bit of a disclaimer for this one. It is, it sounds like I'm judging someone else, but again, that person is me, it's all of us, it's every single person on this planet. Can be sort of guilty of the things that I'm talking about in the next song. So yeah, I'd also love to hear what people think about it after the song.
Great.
I can relate.
so unjust, but you won't turn back. It's like watching a heart that's barely beaten. Yeah, from red to black, I can forgive.
So, it's up to you. How do you want to? Do you want to have anything to say?
Yeah, for that one, I don't know. There's no specific there's nothing specific that that song is actually about. And the reason for that is I really love hearing what people personally take away from it. Mm-hmm. I've had everything from a woman going through a divorce, just saying, "Wow, that really is." It's like you're singing about my relationship, and then other people see it more as sort of like a social justice, more of a global issues that are happening all around us. So I don't know, I kind of wanted to put it out there to you. And again, if anyone kind of, if it specifically struck a chord with you.
So it's up to you.
I think it's very much what we every day, we say we forgive, but we can't often forget. And, to say you bang a hole in a fence post to pull that nail out, there's still the hole is there. So it's very much to me, we hurt someone, we can say we're sorry, but we leave a pain, we leave a scar there, and that was very much the song to me.
And I've never heard these lyrics before. I mean, I've heard them, but I've never understood what you were saying. But while you were saying that, I was thinking sometimes, I saw a more positive way of looking at I'll never forget what you did to me. Like, if you were singing that in praise of God, that would be, wow. You've changed me in a way that's not necessarily negative, but in a positive direction. So I like that you can read it both ways, depending on circumstances in your life, so.
I think the image that I took when I first heard your lyrics for this song is interesting because it for me it painted a really dark picture of and scary picture of something that we don't often think about as one of the biggest evils or one of the scariest things, and that's apathy. And I think that you get this picture in your head of someone who just doesn't really care. And for me, that's, when I really think about it, it's almost scarier than someone who has an agenda against you, At least that person, you kind of understand, they have a conviction and they have something going. But someone who just, sees something that bothers them or that should bother them and just, decides to completely ignore problem or completely pass by someone in need, that's really scary. You have the line that goes, turn the heart from red to black. And that to me is, that's a red to black thing there, not an evil super lord bent on destroying the planet. That's the scary part of humanity is apathy and just disconnecting yourself. Disconnecting yourself from things that matter because it's easier.
And I think also I've noticed the people who have the least of the people that I know in my life who don't have a lot are usually the ones that step up to the plate and do something and take a stand, and I'm kind of like the privileged white girl that often is like, yeah, you can take that one, or just kind of. Usually I'll just point out something that's happening and kind of like, hey, does anyone want to step in there? So it just amazes me. I have this one friend, she's from Ethiopia. She's in a very small apartment with her boyfriend. And they took in someone they don't know at all, an inner city girl who got pregnant and was kicked out by her parents, and parents had the baby, and they took her in, and she's living in our house like for an indefinite amount of time. And my friend, my Winnie, her name is, just said, "I can't believe this happens in Canada. I can't believe this happens in Winnipeg." You know, like there's, she was just so shocked that this stuff was happening here. And I was, you know, in my head being like, thanks for taking that girl, because I probably wouldn't do that. And so I think it's just, it's so cool to see that and just to try and, I don't know, try to live out what a lot of the leaders around us are arguing.
Do you ever think people are going to judge you because of the lyrics that you write and like how you, like, they may turn it around and say, well, do you, you know, sounds like you're really, you know, hard of heart and you have all this sort of, I don't know, red to black kind of bitterness, or, you know, like they can personalize it for you and sort of turn it on you and say, well, you know, oh, well, we'll pray for you, or, I don't know, some kind of trite thing, you know.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Not that I'm saying that you are, I'm saying, like, yeah. It's a hard, edgy song, so it's kind of like, in my mind, I was, like, trying not to frame it that, in my mind, like, whoa.
I think we live in a culture now where we're, you know, there's so much music around us, it's tough for people to really judge someone based on one song and completely, you know, label them based on one. I think if you're watching a set of someone playing, you know, sad song after sad song after dark and dreary image over and over again, then you might want to kind of think, oh, you know, I wonder what this person's, going through to have all this. But I think that unless someone is really constantly churning that out, I don't think people usually take a look at one song and they immediately identify that with one, with the person who's singing it.
I don't know. I would disagree.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think people do have a tendency to say, oh, what's that about? Like, bad breakup? Like, what happened there? You know? So I think that's why I do feel the need to have, like, sort of disclaimers with my songs, or, like, let people know what they're about, or better yet, maybe not have any of that and just see who comes to me after and says that was sort of an experience they went through. Like, I would much rather sort of hear the perspective from the audience. But I'm not really worried about being judged. I don't play enough to be judged.
It's interesting how many people immediately assume a song is about a romantic relationship,
yeah.
Or some sort of, you know, some sort of broken relationship in the past that you've had, because, you know, I totally forget, I was going to look this up before I came this morning, but I was watching an interview with the guy who wrote a song, and it's like a love song anthem on the radio right now about these harsh feelings between two people, and everybody thinks it's about this bad breakup. And he said, you know what, this song was just written about my road manager who I was really pissed off with, and, you know, they were on the road and they just couldn't put up with the way that they were dealing with them, so he wrote this really angsty song about his road manager, this guy, and now it's, everyone's thinking, oh yeah, it's just like my breakup. It's like, you know, I wonder what woman did that to him. And it's not the case at all. And it's interesting how every song, the first thing stereotypically people think of, oh, it's a love song, but
yeah.
Not necessarily.
And I think the important thing as far as worrying about being judged, I mean, when you put music out there, you're vulnerable, and that's just the way it is. But I think as long as it's coming from an honest place and a truthful place inside of you, it doesn't really matter what people, how they're going to react necessarily. I mean, yeah, I think we all have anger and bitterness and joy and happiness inside of us, and so that all comes out as we write. So, yeah, thank you very much, you guys. I'm going to move over here so I don't have the post to bump elbows with. So we might run a little over time, but we started late, so that's okay. So now it's my turn. I'm going to share two songs with you. I may not open them up for discussion because I'm not as brave as Lana is. But, yeah, we'll see how it goes. So this first song is an attempt to... I was listening to a lot of sort of late 60s singer-songwriters who were very brave and ambitious with how they would craft a song. And their use of metaphors and sort of ideas that I think has been put by the wayside a lot. And so I decided I was going to try and revive that. And but in a song about, I think, the eternal struggle between God and human beings, and the fight between a real connection in spirituality and sort of a parody of one that I think we see a lot. And so I don't have the words, unfortunately, for you. I didn't think that far ahead. But hopefully you'll be able to hear them, and I'll talk a little bit more about them after. First. I'm just going to read this quote from this book called Big Sur by Jack Kerouac. If you've never read Jack Kerouac, you're missing out a lot. But this sort of frames what I think is the struggle that Paul in Romans frames when he said, what I don't want to do, I do, and what I do want to do, I don't do. I think I got that backwards, but you get the gist. Which I think is the human condition as it exists in relationship to God, and probably in relationship to each other, and all that sort of stuff. So this is Jack Kerouac kind of at the end of a bender, and he's at the end of his rope, and in this flash he sees a cross, and so he's describing this experience. I see the cross. It's silent. It stays a long time. My heart goes out to it. My whole body fades away to it. I hold out my arms to be taken away by it. By God, I am being taken away from my body. My body starts dying and swooning out to the cross, standing in a luminous area of the darkness. I start to scream because I know I'm dying, but I don't want to scare Billy, this is the other guy in the house, or anybody else with my death scream. So I swallow the scream and just let myself go into death and the cross. As soon as that happens, I slowly sink back to life. Therefore, the devils are back. Commissionaires are sending out orders in my ear to think anew. Babbling secrets are hissed. Suddenly, I see the cross again, this time smaller and far away, but just as clear. And I say through all the noise of the voices, I am with you, Jesus, for always. Thank you. I lie there in a cold sweat, wondering what's come over me. For years, my Buddhist studies and pipe smoking assured meditations on emptiness, and all of a sudden the cross is manifest to me. My eyes fill with tears. We'll all be saved. I won't even tell Dave Wayne about it. This is the other guy. I won't go wake him up and scare him. He'll know soon enough. Now I can sleep. I turn over, but it's only begun. It's only 1 o'clock in the morning, and the night wears on to the wheeling moon, worse and worse till dawn, by which time I've seen the cross again and again. But there's a battle somewhere, and the devils keep coming back. I know if I could only sleep for an hour, the whole complex of noisy brains would settle down. Some control would come back somewhere inside there. Some blessing would soothe the whole issue. There we go. A man once asked the question, what is at the heart of men? I told him it was love. Ask me once again. So I locked him in a closet, and I turned out all the lights. Still his question rang out all through the night. In the morning when I released him, he would not accept his fate. So I threw him into the garden I was thinking about when I wrote this was sort of, as I said, the relationship between God and humans, but even more specifically, the relationship between the church and God, and the nature of that struggle. And so, the speaker, in my imagination of the story, is the church, the collective church, being asked by God what exactly is in the heart of humanity, and the church replying with its answer, love. Of course, it's love, because that's what you want to hear, God. And God asking again, which he tends to do, if we look at the story of, say, Peter on the beach. And so God gets locked away in a closet because he's getting too inconvenient. And I think that's, again, this is all metaphorical, but I think that happens in sort of society, that once something starts to become inconvenient, an idea or say someone talking too loud, we put them away, and that includes God, and we decide that we're going to run it the way we want to run it. And so in this first, I'm still in the first stanza here, but when God's released, he's put in the garden. And, you know, so the garden is the image, obviously, you know, resurrection image, Garden of Eden kind of image, somewhere far away. And, but he doesn't leave, he just decides to wait. And so in the next stanza, the speaker enters his kitchen, thinking that he's done away with this pesky God, and yet God is there. And that he's sitting there like a cancer. One of the things I was trying to do is not be afraid of scary words when I was writing this. So words like cancer and carcass, and because I think they really make a point. If you're thinking through the speaker's perspective, this is what this is. This thing you can't get rid of that's killing you, because he won't stop asking the questions. And so in the next stanza, he opens up the paper and points at the page, the newspaper, the idea of public arena. And so this character who's got some sort of darkness that is now public, and he's being offered to be released of it. And again, I have him repeat the line because just for that same reason that I had it repeated before. And again, the speaker... church refuses, he relocks the gate and keeps himself in that cage rather than having to actually live in community with God and be freed from it. And then the last sort of, I mean, this is kind of a story if you didn't pick up on that, but the last part is the idea of crucifixion and hanging God from this highest tower. The obvious one is crucifixion, but I also think when you look at churches or monuments to Christ, in a way, we build these monuments, we say they're to God, but they are monuments to ourselves, and we've murdered God and put him up there, call it a crucifix or whatever you want, and we think we're doing his work by proclaiming this image, and yet the crowds curse his name. The real image that stuck in my mind is the idea of Rio de Janeiro, where they have that giant Christ figure on the mountain. And the ironic thing about this statue is that the side that God faces is the rich, affluent part of Rio, but his back faces the slums. And so you have this image where here's something that's supposed to proclaim Christ, proclaim God, and it's something that's cursed. Because of poverty and greed and all sorts of other things like that. It becomes a curse to the people around it. And then this idea of filling the grave with stones. Again, a garden image, the stone in front of the tomb. And the idea of looking down at, or this question coming back anew before me like a tank. That might have come out of just the rhyme scheme, but I like the idea of something being before you like a tank. It conjures ideas of Tiananmen Square, things like that. And so this immovable object that you can't fight, even though you think you've killed this problem and buried it in the ground and put rocks above it, it's still there, and this question stands out. And finally, there's a realization that as the speaker looks down at his bloodied hands, the answer to what fills the heart of men is hate. And that that is the human condition. And that's why we need God, is because I don't know that we can make it on our own. I think if you look at the world, you see this idea that human beings are consumed by hate for one another, which is tragic. But that's why Christ's message is so important and so revolutionary. And so, in the end, I didn't want to leave the song there, because I just felt like, even for a sad song, that was a little too sad. And so I added this last verse about the idea that there is grace, and trying to personify grace, and sort of the style of the Holy Spirit, And so I have this line that Grace floats like a specter, too ethereal to touch. She longs to soothe like a nectar. But then there's a human condition that slips in again, because I fear she asks too much. And so even though there is this grace and it's willing to save us and not us that much, we're worried that it's going to be too much. And so the speaker says, I lock myself away in a colorful display. And I think in my mind that's referring once again to the church and its colorful displays of whatever that might be, and sort of being able to put God at the side, because we can worship ourselves, and the great things that we can do, our acts and miracles and whatever else, because we're afraid that if we do actually interact with this God, with this grace, that those dark parts of us are going to be exposed, and we just can't handle that. So, I guess I'm really a fatalist when it comes to human beings, because I can't even turn it into a happy song. But I think, in my mind, there is, you know, life is a struggle, and thank God, literally, we have grace and we have Christ's sacrifice, because then we have that hope that we could somehow transcend our humanness and actually accept this grace. You know, but I've never been able to fully make that change, and it always comes slipping back to my own humanness, and so it's just a way I was trying to express that. So that's that one. I had another one, but it's getting late. So, yeah. Let's just wrap it up. Maybe I'll save it for another time. So if Luke and Lana and Jane want to come back up, we're going to sing one last song together, to worship together. And we're going to pass the communion plate around as well.
Longing of the branches.
if the little bud along enough the arteries to purify the blood and let the heavens hear it, the penitential hymn come healing of the spirit, come healing of the limb. Oh, let the heavens hear it, the penitential hymn come healing of the spirit, come healing of the limb.
God, we thank you for this beautiful day, for this chance to be together, and for this chance to explore the gifts that you've given us. We just pray that you'll go with us this week. Stay on our hearts and on our minds as we go out into the world. I pray that in your name. Amen. Go in peace.